the Comedy Forecast Network. Let's dog-ear this for now.
Comedy Forecast is powered by its patrons. To support the show and get episodes before everyone else, visit patreon.com and search for Comedy Forecast, all one word with the number 4. Or just go to comedyforecast.com and click on the Patreon link on the right-hand side of the page.
Oh, hi, folks. Clinton here. Yep, another year, another Dragon Con in Atlanta over Labor Day weekend. And was it ever fun-filled? I hosted another great hashtag Pizza Friday meetup at the Mellow Mushroom with good friends and great pizza. And for the third year running, the gang from Technorama and I closed out the Dragon Con parade with our Futurama-based Robot Santa crew. But of course, the highlight of my Dragon Con weekend is always the live show. But rather than just tell you about it, let's go there now. Oh, and as a reminder, this show runs about an hour. So sit back, relax, and enjoy. Welcome, everyone, to Comedy Forecast, Technorama and Friends, live from Dragon Con 2016. That is the short title.
That's the hashtag involves you get to use.
September 2nd, 2016.
Exactly. The hashtag is longer than 140 characters, so we had to whittle it down a bit.
Yeah, that's right.
But it's great to be back here in Atlanta. We're always happy to be here for the show. It's wonderful to be in Atlanta because this is where The Walking Dead started, and I think they get the idea for The Walking Dead from the way people walk around Monday morning at Dragon Con. So But right now, it's Friday night, and people are ready to go, so we're going to get going. One of the things I like to do is reflect on what happened since the last time we were here, what happened since last year. And one of the big things that happened is that we had the Olympics. The Olympics just got over. Mm-hmm. And I'm cautious about saying the word Olympics because apparently you get in trouble for saying the word Olympics. And certainly I wouldn't want to say Olympics if it's going to get me in trouble with the Olympic Committee, even though apparently the first Olympics were in ancient Greece. I feel like this is the kind of sweetheart deal that Disney has been shooting for years.
That's right. Yep.
We also had a new Star Wars movie that came out since last time we were here, or as I like to call it, JJ does the original trilogy's greatest hits, plus a thumbs up torch. We also had a new Star Trek movie that came out, and if you noticed at the end, not everybody picked up on this, but if you noticed at the end of the new Star Trek movie, when they're putting the new Enterprise together, they actually use Velcro strips so that they can take it apart again in the next movie all over again.
That's right.
Apparently, the Enterprise is now an official red shirt. So that's
wow,
very, very sad. We're also in the middle of a presidential election, which I thought, and I don't normally do anything about politics, but really, what can trump an election? You know, but Clinton, they say, please don't mention any names. So I won't talk about any of that stuff here. What I did actually want to talk about was something that happened to my show. Those of you who listen to Comedy Forecast, you know that I try to put out an episode every time there's a 4 in the date. So I put out something on the 4th, the 14th, the 24th. If there happens to be a 34th of the month, I would put one out then as well.
34th.
But every year, like clockwork, April rolls around. So I have to put out an episode every single day. And I've done the math, and that means 30 shows. Well, this year I decided to do a bit of planning ahead, so I actually scripted out an outline of a story that I put out on weekdays during the month called The Killing Apps, and a lot of people like that show. So that went out on weekdays.
Yeah,
it was
good.
20 episodes of that, and on the weekends I would do some other stuff. And anybody follow me on Facebook or Twitter or Instagram, they would notice that every Saturday, I would go to Dunkin' Donuts, and I'd go to a Dunkin' Donuts, followed by another 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 Dunkin' Donuts. And what I was doing was I was writing an episode of the show every time I stopped and had another coffee to keep me going. So it was a lot of work to put all those episodes together, but it went really well. And when it was all done, I said, great, now I get to relax and actually only put out 3 episodes a month. Then I got an email from my web hosting provider saying, Yeah, we're deactivating your account, and we're going to delete all your files in 15 days. And I went, okay, I guess they really don't like my show. I don't know what that's
all. They were a fan of the cleaning apps.
Yeah, and as I'm reeling back from that, I get a email from Google. And when you get an email from Google, it's not always a good thing. And Google said, yeah, we're going to delist you from Google. Apparently what happened was I found out that my site had been injected with malware and was spewing out all sorts of random links every place. And at first I thought, well, that's cool. Somebody really thought enough about my show to really not want to have people listen to it, apparently. But then I realized, no, it just happens to everybody. So here I was coming off of doing a month's worth of shows, and I was extremely exhausted. And I get these emails, and I don't know how to react to it. And to be quite honestly, at that point, it was a bit of a, you know, I threw up my hands saying, I don't know how to fix this. I think I'm just going to have to end the show because, you know, Google is now going to say comedyforecast.com is, you can't use that anymore. So I started sending out to my Patreon patrons saying, sorry, you know, this is happening. I was tweeting out saying, I think this is the end of the show. I started thinking about other shows that I could do to replace it that would be different things. But it really was literally the end. And I got a couple of emails from people. One, I want to call out somebody who's not here, and that's Scott Morris, who does he and his wife Tracy do the Disney Indiana podcast. And also the person sitting to my right, Mr. Craig Stepp, said, what exactly is the problem here? And so I explained to them, well, my site got injected with all this malware and all this stuff. And Scott gave me some great advice on how to safeguard myself on things, which I can do, you know, for the future state. But Craig really said, well, let's just fix this, okay? Let's just get in there and fix this thing. So he took over, and he was saying, well, I'm you know, reconfiguring the, you know, manifold, and I'm using the sonic screwdriver, and I'm going, that's whatever you're doing, just go ahead and keep doing that.
Injectors, whatever it takes.
Isolinear chips.
And he got this. He said, it doesn't look pretty. It doesn't look as nice as it did before, but the site is back up. And if you go there now, Comedy Forecast is there. So although I probably won't be going back to doing the show three times a month because I am thinking of doing something else in addition to Comedy Forecast, if you've been following Dog Days of Podcasting, one of the things I've been doing are these really dumb reviews of video games that I'm playing on my phone. I'm getting more followers on SoundCloud from that than anything else. So I'm thinking, well, maybe there's something in that. So, the combination of things going on. But Comedy Forecast will be back. And when you hear the show back, and me being here, I want you to give a big thanks to Mr. Craig Stepp.
You're welcome. I couldn't let it go. You were going to, but I couldn't let it go.
That's right. Huh. So with that said, I'd like to turn things over to the people to my right, Mr. Craig Stepp and Chuck Tomasi for Technorama.
Yay.
Craig, can you get the Firefly site back up?
Sure.
We'd like to get Firefly back. Can you help with that?
Yeah, I'll bring the seasons back up.
Hey, welcome to Technorama, part of the Technorama Comedy Forecast, Technorama and Friends, and more Technorama.
Hashtag.
I am Chuck Tomasi, and with me as always is my wonderful co-host, Craig Stepp. How are you?
I'm doing well. How are you doing?
All right. I'm doing great. We're going to keep this show moving along. Okay. Hey, we are like spot on. Look at that.
Yeah.
Okay. Our story this week comes to us from Oddity Central. And of course, I closed the window before. Yeah, one of my favorite sites for weird and unusual stories. This one is a trucker who finds love after texting phone number scrawled on a public toilet wall.
Anybody would do.
This just screamed.
It wasn't Jack Jaffe.
This screamed Dragon Con to me when I read it. So it may not be the classic fairy tale romance, but the story of how a British 51-year-old trucker met the love of his life is definitely one for the books. Believe it or not, he found her number scrawled on the wall of a public toilet. They say love happens when you least expect it, and that was certainly the case for Mark Ellis, a trucker from Bright House, I believe that is Bright House, not Bry House, West Yorkshire. He was on his way to meet his friends for a drink at a pub in Garforth when he decided to stop at a public restroom, as we all may need to do from time to time. While going about his business, he noticed a raunchy message scrawled on one of the toilet walls. If you want a good shag, call Donna on this phone number. That was more of an Australian accent, but I'll work on it.
You're slipping there.
Mark apparently found it very intriguing because he ended up texting the mysterious number. Wow, that's desperate. He says, "Hi, what are you up to?" And she says, "I was curious to know if it was a real human being," he recently told the Sun newspaper. "We still laugh about it." And this is where it gets good because they've been together for a while. Much to his surprise, Donna actually replied to, "Who the F is this? I mean, who is this?"
Yeah.
They struck up a conversation, met 3 days later, and eventually fell in love with each other. Donna Roberts, who works as a legal secretary, told the Sun that her partner only told her that he got his number days after they met. She was perplexed by his story at first, but later realized it must have been left on the toilet wall by her spiteful ex-boyfriend. "I should thank my ex. He did me a favor." Mark and Donna have 2 children together now, ages 8 and 9. Whenever one of them asks, how did you meet Daddy? Mom makes up a lie and says, "He texted me by mistake." Donna told reporters, "Well, with all the attention their unusual love story has been getting lately, I'll doubt they're able to keep it secret from their kids much longer. And why would you want to? It's pretty darn special." I think eHarmony's got nothing on these people.
I agree.
So
if you're looking for love, go put your number on the bathroom wall.
The number of your ex and say you're doing them a favor.
That's right.
Hopefully nobody has found any such numbers on the bathroom wall. If they have, please let me know. Wait, that didn't come.
Freudian slip.
Oops.
That's right. All right. And back to Clinton.
Any other commentary on this unusual story?
No, I think it speaks for itself, actually. So
I'm good with that. Yeah. Okay.
Pretty much.
So next up, we have a very special guest. She's the author of these 2 books. Allies and Enemies Fallen, and Allies and Enemies Rogues. And not only that, but Allies and Enemies Fallen is a finalist in the first ever Dragon Awards that are being given out this Sunday at Dragon Con.
Whoa.
Please welcome to the stage Amy Murphy. Well, thank you for being here, Amy. Can I call you Amy?
Sure. We've known each other for, 15 years? I think it's okay,
okay
by now.
That's good.
But my husband wants to make sure you still call him Mr. Murphy.
Okay, I understand, Mr. Murphy. I understand. Well, congratulations on your nomination for the book, and we're going to talk about that again in a few minutes. Mm-hmm. But first of all, I think people want to know, what makes Amy tick? And is it a good type of ticking, or is it the type of ticking where you want to back off and call somebody? So, first of all, you're very much into fandom. I know when I was working on my Star Trek video, 50 Years of Star Trek, which you can find on the Comedy Forecast YouTube channel, you gave me a lot of helpful advice and information on Voyager, so you're a big Voyager fan. You also are a big fan of Farscape. So what are you watching and reading right now in the genre?
Well, I have to say that right now I have a top 5 or so list I've got going on right here. First of all, Dark Matter. I'm glad to see that they were renewed for a 3rd season, so yay. Game of Thrones, like the rest of, I don't know, the world.
Whoa! Good work.
Wow, that was quick.
Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Of course, I'm a huge fan of any other Marvel vehicle as well. So, and Stranger Things. Everyone has seen Stranger Things. If you're not, you should probably just leave right now and go launch Netflix.
Oh, wait. I've seen Stranger Things in this show.
No.
And Doctor Who. And I'd have to say the one that I'm really excited about is The Expanse. And it's kind of interesting that you bring up Star Trek, because I kind of have a way of thinking of The Expanse. And if you've not seen it, it's like a really gritty, more realistic portrayal of space exploration and how we colonize the solar system. And in regard to the Star Trek, it's actually the anti-Star Trek, if you think about it, because Roddenberry's vision of the future was we leave all of our strife behind and we are in this future where everybody gets together and works together well. And The Expanse, if you've seen it, not to give too much away if you haven't, it has a lot to do with the strife that we bring with us when we colonize the solar system. So in that, in addition to the technological aspect, it also brings a realistic aspect of how we would interact with each other, and not always for the best. So,
cool. Well, you mentioned Stranger Things, and Bonnie and I have started watching that. We were binge watching it, but if you can imagine a sloth going the wrong way up an escalator, that's our speed of binge watching things. So, we're at episode one at the moment. And also you're a fantastic costumer. They're beautiful and you do them very quickly. How many costumes would you say you've made over the years?
Over the years, I would have to say it's probably close to 24. I don't always hold on to them. I end up selling them, but, funny story. I was thinking about the very first cosplay, and this is way before anyone ever called it cosplay, was I created a Spider-Man costume from my mom's unitard, which is this is like when they call them unitards, right? This is like when you had the jazzercise and stuff. And
that's what we used to call the kids in school when we teased them.
I don't think that's allowed. Anyway,
it was the eyebrow, okay?
Unibrow tord.
Yes, you're thinking
ignore,
of unibrow.
Ignore the man
yes.
at the end of the table.
Anyway, that was my Spider-Man cosplay. That was my first foray into cosplay. My mom was not really supportive of that, as you might imagine, with the magic marker all over the unitard. But yes.
And I want to get to the books now. Now, these books, I must say, are very thick.
Yes, you can kill a chihuahua with
Yeah, so, I mean, obviously I have not read them because they are thick. I mean, it's nothing personal. It's just I have a short...
it's bigger than a pamphlet.
Attention span. Oh. And so, you know, honestly, if I can get through the crawl at the beginning of a Star Wars movie, I go, woohoo, made it. Oh, there's the rest of a movie? Oh, darn. You were able to do all this work to make these thick books, and I want to ask you, why do you hate trees so much? Because clearly there's some issue. Were you scared by a redwood when you were a child? I understand. But no, seriously, now these both are allies and enemies, these two books here. So what is going on inside these books?
Okay. Well, there are actually words inside the books, and okay. The words tell a story.
Oh,
no.
It doesn't actually tell my hatred over and over again of trees.
There's no pictures?
No pictures, and no pop-up, and no scratch and sniff.
I'm out.
You could probably add your own, but I don't want to know about that. Actually, they started their lives as ebooks, and the print editions came after someone said, well, I don't read ebooks. You know, it's like I don't own a television set. I don't read. I'm like, okay, I'll make a regular book. So they came through CreateSpace, which is your way of making print-on-demand books through Amazon. So that's how these are here. But they live as ebooks. That's how they started their life, and that's how they always start their life for me. This story is actually, at its heart, it's military science fiction, and it's got a heavy dose of space opera. And a very interesting thing, I've always had a certain amount of appeal to military science fiction, huge fan of Aliens, and I've always loved that, and like Stargate SG-1. And I've actually had veterans contact me and said, have you served? Or I'm very impressed that you're able to kind of create this kind of mentality for a soldier. It's a female soldier that's a protagonist. And they've asked me about that. And they also asked the question about, well, you're a girl and you write military science fiction. And it didn't even occur to me that I'm not allowed to. I don't know. It's a thing, apparently. So, but anyway, it is military science fiction, heavy dose of space opera. And the first book really starts its life with two different female protagonists from different ends of life, of their lives, different worlds, and the story ends up meeting in the middle. And the second book, I would have to say, you typify it, it follows a lot of these same characters, but it's more enriched. There are different points of view, lots more stories to combine, and it's more like Mad Max Fury Road meets Firefly. So, and then there's their third one coming out.
Cool.
Romance. There's romance.
Apparently, there's romance.
Apparently, you don't know what's in your books?
Yeah.
There's like some mushy, kissy love stuff in it, but it just happens to be in there. It's not what it's about. It just happens to be there.
And I think you found out which half of my family reads. It's yeah. That half.
She just tells you about the books.
That's right. So I wrote a novel. Well, I kind of tried to write a novel once, but it failed. I had... The main characters were named Ellen, Alan, Emma, Ethan, and Arthur. And I just got too confused about who was who. So I couldn't... They were all quintuplets as well, which didn't help things any. And one of them was 10 years older than the other ones, which really...
Say what? Things up.
So it just... It didn't work out. But you were able to do what I couldn't do. And one of the... You were talking about in your category, in the military science fiction category... Your book is the only one that's an indie book, which I think is an amazing feat that you got in there with the big names.
Oh, for the Dragon
Yes, for the
Awards,
Dragon Awards. And how is life as an indie publisher?
Well, first of all, I have to say, I'm just happy to be on any list. So the fact that there's...
Well, there's the bathroom wall over there.
Yeah, it's not any list.
That's how we met. No.
Oh, sure. Turn on me.
Wait, I think Bonnie's the one looking for love. She's going to put her.
So, yeah, they're really big names. There's Weber or Faber or however you say his name. And Scalzi's on there. And people that are like have really the power of large publishers against them. And life as an indie is very interesting. It can be very stressful. A lot of people, and I don't know what sort of background people that are listening to this would have in sort of knowing about independent publishing, it's basically taken off. I mean, we're talking at a geometric rate. People can write a book and publish it the next day. Now, I wouldn't advise that because it doesn't really turn out with a lot of words that make sense. You could have, like, I'm a fish written all over and over again for 500 pages. Nope. So, you know, there are some deficits. You don't have a big marketing strategy behind you. You don't have an agent. But at the same time, you kind of make your own plan. And you can always change things, too. So if you decide that your book says, I am a fish over and over again 500 times, you can go back and fix it and say, my bad. So there are always pros and cons for everything, too. And it does have its challenges. And like I said, just happy to be on the list.
A good list.
Yeah, a good list.
Now, these two books are part of a trilogy,
yes.
Right? So is
it's
this
a trilogy in five books.
I was going to say, is it a trilogy? No. Is it a Douglas Adams trilogy? Is it a J.K. Rowling's? I'm going to keep writing these things until the only thing you don't know about Harry Potter is boxers or briefs. Or as they say in England, bangers and mash or toad in a hole, I believe. Is the term.
No.
But no. Those words came out of my mouth, didn't they?
Yeah. So I'm never going to be eating those meals in England the same again.
My wife has put her head in her hands. So. But seriously, so are you going to have another story after this? Do you have plans beyond the allies and enemies?
There is a larger universe, and it does all come into play. Basically, the plan is really for three books. I know what happens to every single one of the characters. I know the very last thing anyone will ever see any of them doing.
We won't tell anyone. Tell us.
I can't stop.
Yeah, just between us.
But the plan is for it to end with the third book because I have two more standalones I want to work on as well. So.
Okay. And we're probably coming to the end of the segment, so I want to make sure people knew how to get the books.
In addition to a book like this, which you can kill bugs with or shim furniture that's uneven.
She has very violent uses for her books. Harming chihuahuas?
Basically, they're exclusively available on Amazon. They're ebooks. And folks that are here today in our audience have a card that's for a free download of the first book in the series. It's got a little QR code in the background. Very welcome.
If you read electronic versions.
If you read electronic versions. Otherwise, I can't help you with the paperback. They are kind of heavy. Anyway, so yes, they're all on Amazon. And if you ever want to learn more, I can be reached at amyjmurphy.com. You can sign up for my mail list there.
All right. Very good. And I want to thank you and Barry, Mr. Murphy, for coming. And you came down all the way from Vermont for this. You came down today. And I want to thank you both for bringing me some Ben & Jerry's direct from the factory. Yes. I just kind of wish you had kept it frozen, but That's okay. It's I appreciate the gesture.
Kept it under my armpit.
Yeah, okay.
There's a new flavor. Ben and Jerry's armpit.
So, ladies
armpit.
And gentlemen, please give another hand to Amy Murphy. And now we're back over to Technorama.
All right.
Flip the switch.
That's right.
All right, this is part of the show we call On This Day in History, and we need crowd participation, so when I told you this is not church, I lied. We are going to be recruiting. I mean, dismissing you row by row, like it's communion.
Reach under your chairs, and there's hymnals on each other. I'm just kidding.
No.
You get a car.
Let me start the music. There we go. And then it goes something like this. On this day in history for September 7, 2016, this is the 251st day of the year of the Gregorian calendar. There are 115 days remaining in 2016. And now I'm going to get a microphone up here and dismiss you row
Steve,
by row.
Steve.
Hello. We need a crowd.
There you go.
Okay. So, row run, beginning with Gary. Need you to read the next slides.
Whoops.
Eat the microphone.
It was on this date in 1776, according to American colonial reports, Ezra Lee makes the world's first submarine attack in the Turtle, attempting to attach a time bomb to the hull of the HMS Eagle in New York Harbor. No British records of this attack exist.
Because they went back in time.
194 years ago today, Dom Pedro I declares Brazil independent from Portugal on the shores of the Ipiranga Brook in Sao Paulo.
It was 140 years ago today in Northfield, Minnesota, Jesse James and the James's younger gang attempt to rob the town's bank, but are driven off by armed citizens.
Daniel can read. All right.
The first game of what would become known as rugby league football is played in England starting in 1895 through 96, Northern Rugby Football Union season on this date in 1895.
It was 120 years ago today that the first successful heart surgery was conducted on this day by Ludwig Röntgen.
Watch out. Here it comes.
That same date in 1906, Alberto Santos Dumont files his 14 bis aircraft in Bagatelle, France for the first time successfully. Yeah!
Oh, yeah, I can pronounce that. Eugene Lefebvre crashes a new French-built Wright biplane during a test flight at UVC, south of Paris, becoming the first aviator in the world to lose his life in a powered, heavier-than-aircraft 107 years ago today.
Two newly purchased Savoia boats crash in the Swiss Alps en route to Finland, where they would serve with the Finnish Air Force, killing both crews 96 years ago today.
Come on, Kyle.
89 years ago today, the first fully electronic television system is achieved by Filio Farnsworth.
Good news, everyone! Good news. Would you like me? Come on, Bonnie!
The last thylacine, a carnivorous marsupial named Benjamin, dies alone in its cage at the Hobart Zoo in Tasmania on this date in 1936.
Oh, sad.
I believe that was the last of its kind.
Yes.
Amy, would you like to bring the food up?
Yeah, come on, cheer us up, Amy.
Maybe you'll get a plane crash. I don't know.
74 years ago today saw the first flight of the consolidated B-32 Dominator.
Mr. Murphy?
Yeah, Mr. Murphy.
Come on.
We're running out of music.
All right, we're done.
Next slide.
The 300-meter-tall CKVR-DT transmission tower in Barrie, Ontario, Canada, is hit by a light aircraft in a fog, causing it to collapse. All aboard the aircraft are killed 39 years ago today.
Yay! Wow. I was going to say, we're cheering that. Wow.
38 years ago today, while walking across Waterloo Bridge in London, Bulgarian dissident Georgi Markov is assassinated by Bulgarian secret police agent Francesco Gionguino by means of a ricin pellet fired from a specially designed umbrella. Anybody else watch those spy shows where they show that? Yeah. I was on that bridge, but I didn't get the pellet. I took the red pill. You guys want me to finish this out, or anybody else want to read another one? It's open mic night.
Knock it out.
At Technorama. Oh, boy. Okay, this is... See, the fun of this on Technorama is just seeing if we can pronounce any of these names. Abdul Ahad Mohammed, the first Afghan in space, returns aboard the Soviet spacecraft Soyuz TM-5 after 9 days in the Mir space station on this date in 1988. Do you guys want to play along? Can you read that from there?
I can read it, yeah.
Okay, go for one, Craig.
Happy birthday goes out on this day to French mathematician and cosmetologist, author.
Cosmetologist? That was his other career, okay? Yeah.
Before he was a cosmologist.
Author.
Georges Louis.
Yeah, you say it then.
He spoke French. When was he born?
1707.
Go, Clinton.
Also born on that same date in 1815, Scottish explorer and surveyor John McDoula Stewart.
And the music is over, but we're going to keep going. September 7th, 1836 is also the birthday of German physicist and academic August Doepler.
Doepler. Yeah, right.
Thank you.
William Fries Green. Green.
It's like this every week, people.
That's right. English photographer, director, and cinematographer and cosmologist. Was born today in 1836.
I'm a shampoo technician.
Sharing his birthday with him in 1860 is the American painter Grandma Moses.
Banker and philanthropist J.P. Morgan. The yeah. P was for Pierpont. I remember that. Junior was born on this date in 1867. I think his name is on my credit card, too.
That's right. Born today in 1870, Russian pilot, explorer, and author Alexander Kuprin.
That's the best Russian you've ever done.
That's right.
It's also the birthday of Edward Francis Hutton, the co-founder of E.F. Hutton and Co.
And when E.F. Hutton speaks...
Huh? Yeah.
What? Anybody old enough to remember that commercial? Yes. Okay, good.
We've had several of those moments today.
Half of the famous Hewlett-Packard team, David Packard, was born on this date in 1912.
Also born on this date in 1914, physicist and philosopher James Van Allen.
I use his belt to hold up my
pants.
Yes,
no.
What? The Van Allen belt?
Director and producer Samuel Goldwyn Jr. was born in 1926.
He was
rewritten and born again.
Yeah.
And finally, the voice behind Lisa Simpson, actress Julie Kavner, is now 66.
That's Marge Simpson.
No? Who does Lisa?
That's Marge. Lisa's Yeardley Smith.
That's right. Yeardley Smith. Sorry. Oh. Crazy Joe.
I had nothing to do with these slides.
Yeah. Now do you believe any of these facts? Yeah. And that's the way it was on this day in history for September 7th, 2016. Thank you.
Hey, at least somebody's paying attention.
That's to make sure they're awake in the audience.
That's right.
That's the fastest call out we've had. Usually we have to wait a week for the phones to ring.
If they do. What's that? Yeah. Yeah, still calling in.
I can call in right now.
Hey. Sure.
Call the listener line, 707-530-2428.
Hey, that would be awesome if we listen to a voicemail from our own live show 2 weeks from now.
Or how about during the live show?
You're making my head hurt now. Stop.
We're crossing the podcast streams.
So when I announced that I was going to be coming back to do the live show here at Dragon Con, there was really only one question people wanted the answer to, besides why. No. was Abby Fallmacher, owner of the Little Wicker Baskets Company, going to be making an appearance? Well, I'm happy to say yes. Please welcome Miss Abby Fallmacher.
Hello, everyone. I'm Abby Fallmacher, owner of the Little Wicker Basket Company. Little Wicker Baskets. They're everywhere. And whether you're looking for a basket big enough to hold all the new Ghostbusters nerd rage, or one small enough to practice your sawing your pet hamster in half trick, we have you covered.
But that's not why you're here tonight, is it?
If it was, I'd phone it in, like the three of you are doing with the rest of this show. No, I'm here to announce our latest in our product, our latest products,
Fall 2016.
Pop culture tie-in
the
products.
Words, the words on the page.
Well. No, I'm here to...
So that's right, Little Wicker Baskets have a long history of cashing in on media properties, don't they?
You said it, malware magnet.
Okay.
One of our first tie-ins was a set of nesting baskets.
What movie was that for?
The Birds. What part of nesting didn't you understand?
Okay, I get it.
But our most popular line is our Little Wicker Basket Marvel Action Hero figures. Except we always have trouble with the Human Torch basket.
Oh, right, because it catches on fire. I get it.
No, because who wants Fantastic Four crap? No, really. I'd have more luck trying to give away our Zoolander 2 cosmetics baskets.
Okay, well, let's dog-ear that for now. So what do you have for us this time?
Well, tonight, I'm happy to announce right here at DragonCon for the first time our new line of products in honor of Star Trek's 50th anniversary.
Oh, well, that's great.
Yes, we call this set the best weave since Bill Shatner's toupee.
Shh, he's here this weekend.
Ooh, yeah. Not until Sunday. Read the schedule.
Oh, that's right. By that point, you'll be long gone.
Never say long gone to an old person.
Okay, sorry. But how do Little Wicker Baskets figure into the Star Trek universe? I mean, it's the future. Wouldn't there be some sort of synthetic substitute for wicker? I mean, something you could call up in the replicator?
Shut up, Wesley.
Oh.
And let me get to the products.
All right. Sorry.
Now, remember that weird monitor thing that Mr. Spock used to look down into when he was at his science station on the bridge?
Oh, yeah. It kind of was that periscope eyepiece sort of thing?
Well, exactly. Well, we've turned it into a basket.
Oh.
And as a bonus, it doubles as Geordi's Oculus Rift.
Oh. Hey, you know, it also makes a cute little doggy bed for Porthos.
Ooh, it takes a brave man to try and make a joke from Star Trek Enterprise work now in 2016.
All right, never mind that. So what else do we have besides that, then?
Well, this is a very special basket. Ooh. It was very difficult to manufacture. You see, you can put anything in it, like this communicator badge. See?
Okay.
And then,
so?
Watch. I turn it over, and it falls out. It's a mirror universe basket.
Oh.
You see? Instead of putting things in, they fall out.
Yes, okay.
Yeah, right, Brian Brushwood there.
Oh, by the way, you have a little evil Spock goatee thing going on there yourself.
Yes, thank you very much. So what else is in your collection?
There's the phaser little wicker basket.
All right, hold on a second. I've let you slide on a lot of these things, but how do you turn a little wicker basket into a phaser?
Duct tape.
Well, that seems to be about it. I think
quite. We have just one more. We call it the red shirt little wicker basket.
Oh, right. No matter what happens, those guys always seem to die. In fact, I did a video about that you can find over on the Comedy Forecast YouTube channel.
Give it a rest, self-promo boy.
Oh, sorry.
Our red shirt basket is big enough to hold whatever is left of those plucky expendables.
Okay, so I can understand why you didn't bring that in here. The thing must be huge.
No, I have it right here.
Oh. Okay, well, thank you, Miss Abby Fallmacher. I hope you have a lot of success with your Star Trek baskets. Do you have plans for any other tie-ins?
You bet we have the Suicide Squad little wicker baskets. They open huge and then immediately collapse. Then there's our Rogue One baskets. To be honest, you don't really need any of them, but it helps fill in your basket collection. So, whatever. And finally, there's our continuing Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles set. Every time you think the set is finished, we put out another one. But no matter which ones you choose, always remember, little wicker baskets. They're everywhere.
Thank you, Ms. Fallmacher.
You're welcome. All right.
And now, a very special message. Do you often feel the need to charge your device when it's at 40, 60, or even 80%?
I do.
Right. Do you wonder how you'll get through the day with the battery reserves that you have? Always scanning the walls and waiting areas for power outlets. Perhaps you suffer from battery anxiety disorder. Battery anxiety disorder affects tens of Americans daily by keeping them tethered to an outlet by what would normally be a wireless device. Unable to have dinner with the family, unable to go to little Johnny's baseball game, or even those impeding those private moments behind closed doors. Well, there's an answer. Here at the Battery Powerhouse Emporium, we can help. We can sell you a wide variety of batteries for all occasions, weddings, bar mitzvahs, honeymoons, childbirthing, international travel, you name it, don't go without it. The only solution to a bad is bigger battery. So when size matters, see us at the Powerhouse Battery Emporium. Powerhouse Battery Emporium is a subsidiary of Little Wicker Baskets. Thank you.
So next up, hi, my name is Clinton, and I normally do a podcast called Comedy Forecast, located at comedyforecast.com. But for the month of August and into the beginning of September, I'm participating in the Dog Days of Podcasting, located at dogdaysofpodcasting.com. For more information on that, go to dogdaysofpodcasting.com. Essentially, it's a group of podcasters who've gotten together to commit to recording a podcast every single day in August and into the beginning of September about a variety of topics. For me, since I don't play video games, and I certainly don't play video games on my phone, I've decided to record a review of a new video game that I've played on my phone every day during the event. Today's game is Pokemon Go. Now, what I do is I download the game, make a snap judgment what the game is about just by the title, then I play the game and see how close that matches up. So clearly, with Pokemon Go, it could be a couple of things. It could be like a racing cart game. You get all the Pokemons into their own little vehicles, and Pikachu says, "Pika, Pikachu!" And people have no idea if they're supposed to start because they don't know what that means. So that could be a difficult one. The second thing, it could be a game where the Pokemon need to relieve themselves and you have to find a restroom for them. That was another one. A third possibility could be that people are just fed up with Pokemon, so you have to make the Pokemon go, so you are like a Pied Piper and you lead them off a cliff someplace. So that's what I thought the game was, and I went and I downloaded the game and I played it, and I was wrong. I'll admit I was wrong once again about it.
Again.
First of all, you have to register, and I think that if the election committee were to have a registration process as difficult as Pokemon Go, there'd be no more election fraud because no one would vote. I mean, this thing is impossible to, but I finally got through the registration and I started the game and I saw an avatar of me walking around. You don't know how many video games I've never wanted to have of watching me as a person walking around. So I'm going, all right, what is this? Oh, this little, I can find the little Pokemon some places. So I found one. And then apparently I have to assault this thing by throwing pellets at it. And it gets very upset with me. So that didn't make any sense. And I ended up catching one and I couldn't figure out, all right, is it breathing inside that thing? Have I just killed a Pokemon? What am I supposed to do with this thing? But I think the thing that concerned me most about this is that, like the movie They Live, that you're walking around and apparently there are these Pokemon all over the place that you can't see. And it's really freaking me out now. So I say thumbs down to Pokemon Go, and I'll have another review tomorrow. Thank you.
All right, there you go.
Brave, brave, and there's a person sitting right over here who does a Pokemon Go podcast.
That's right. That's right.
Now, for our last segment, we did this last year. Everybody should have on their seat a couple of index cards, and there's some more at the empty seats in the back, so if anybody wants to grab any more of them, we're going to do sort of a Mad Lib version of a fairy tale. I'm going to read the fairy tale, and then I'm going to get to certain points where there's a blank. I'm going to say, you know, when so-and-so said, and you have phrases on your card. So if you think you found something that would be an appropriate phrase to use, just grab one of the cards. And like I said, there are some extras around. Just raise up your hand, and Chuck will come around with the microphone, and you can read what you think should be filling in the blank here. All right, everybody set? Yeah. So here we go. Once upon a time, there was a dear little girl named Little Red Riding Hood. One day, Little Red Riding Hood's mother handed her a basket and said, "Here's a piece of cake and a bottle of wine. Take them to your grandmother. She is ill and weak, and they will do her good." Little Red Riding Hood looked into the basket and said,
"Oh, I'd buy that for a dollar."
And off she went. The grandmother lived out in the woods, half a league from the village. Just as Little Red Riding Hood entered the woods, a wolf met her. "Where are you headed so early, Little Red Riding Hood?" Little Red Riding Hood replied,
"It's a trap!"
And the wolf led her on her way. Then he ran straight to the grandmother's house and knocked on the door. From inside, the grandmother said,
"Say hello to my little friend."
And the wolf replied,
"Resistance is futile."
So the wolf lifted the latch, sprang open the door, and then, seeing the grandmother, he exclaimed,
"Chewy, we're home."
Then he devoured the grandmother, put on her clothes, drew the curtains, and laid himself in bed. When Little Red Riding Hood arrived, she was surprised to find the cottage door open. So she called from the doorway,
"I'm the king of the world!"
That but just conjures up all kinds of bad images.
Yeah, no.
But received no answers. So she went to the bed and drew back the curtains. There lay her grandmother looking very strange. "Oh, grandmother," she said, "what big ears you have." The wolf replied,
"Oh, Kyle got it.
Make it so."
Hey, that was a good Picard, by the way.
"But grandmother, what big eyes you have." The wolf replied,
"Please, Captain, not in front of the Klingons."
"Oh, but grandmother, what a terrible big mouth you have." And the wolf replied,
"Kiss my shiny metal ass."
And scarcely had the wolf said this than with one bound he was out of bed and swallowed up Little Red Riding Hood. Then he lay down again in the bed, fell asleep, and began to snore very loud. A huntsman was just passing the house, heard the noise, and pausing, thought to himself,
"Pay no attention to the man behind the curtain."
So he went into the house and saw the wolf lying in the bed. The huntsman said,
"Fasten your seatbelt. It's going to be a bumpy night."
Whoa.
Then he took a pair of scissors and began to cut open the stomach of the wolf. When he had made two snips, the little girl sprang out, and she exclaimed,
"We're not hosting an intergalactic kegger down here."
After that, the grandmother sprang out, scarcely able to breathe, but she said,
"I need your clothes, your boots, and your motorcycle."
Then all three were delighted. The huntsman drew off the wolf skin and went home with it. The grandmother ate the cake and drank the wine which Little Red Riding Hood had brought and revived. And finally, thinking about everything that had happened that day, Little Red Riding Hood thought to herself,
"End of line."
The end.
How appropriate. There you go. That was good.
So that is our show for the year. Once again, it's the hours seem to go by so fast.
Yeah, so something.
But we want to make sure that you know where to find us.
Yeah. Oh, wait.
We're bingo. Sitting right here. That's ridiculous. Oh, that's right. Do we have a winner?
Sam Roberts is our bingo winner.
Yes.
Sam Roberts, please come claim your prize.
Did anybody come in second? Anybody get a bingo?
I think they stopped playing because they knew there was no beating me.
Let's just say I came in second.
Yeah. Here's a cup of rice Chex for you.
I feel like that's the real first prize.
There's more if others want it.
And Sam will be giving a dramatic reading of this later on this evening.
Absolutely.
I'm just stuff's laced with crack.
Yeah, that's right. Maybe
where do they find us?
Well, they find me, once again, at comedyforecast.com. And at dogdaysofpodcasting.com.
Yeah. And also you can find us at chuckchat.com/technorama. And, of course, you can find us on all the social media sites at Technorama Podcast.
Thank you, everybody.
Thank you, everybody.
Enjoy the con.
Doctor.
Peace out.
Roger.
Once again, thanks to Chuck and Craig from Technorama, author Amy Murphy, my wife Bonnie, and the greatest live audience in the world. For links, please go to Comedy Forecast and look for the show notes for episode 409. But for now, that's it. We're done. Bye-bye.